Sure, and do that. This is a meeting of the Tananaw Yukon Historical Society, meeting at the Cashin Residence, 1027 Gilmore Street in Fairbanks, on December 4, 1969. And we've just finished a business meeting, and our guest tonight is Miss Ina M. Hamlin, who came to Alaska back in 1926 as an instructor in business administration at the Alaska College. And she was there for 2 years, and now she's back in Fairbanks again after a lapse of some years. And we're pleased to have her with us tonight to tell a little bit of her own history and some of the recollections she has of Fairbanks and the university in the late and mid-20s. So, Miss Hamlin, will you care to take over and tell us something about yourself?
I came to Fairbanks in September of 1926 to become an instructor in business administration at the college, as it was then known. I left Seattle on the Alaska Steamship Line, and while on the way north, I met Professor and Mrs. Morgan and Professor Fuller, who were likewise coming to Fairbanks to teach. Professor Morgan had been here before. He was the agricultural instructor. They had bought a new car, and Professor Morgan asked Professor Fuller and myself to join him driving in from Valdez to Fairbanks. Well, that sounded fine to me. So we left the steamship at Valdez and spent the night there. Then we spent 3 days on the Richardson Trail coming in from Valdez. We left Valdez before noon on the first day of the trip. Professor Morgan asked me to go down to the little restaurant and buy 5 sandwiches and 5 apples for our lunch that day. So I thought, well, that sounded rather skimpy lunch. So I went down and asked the man to fix me up 10 sandwiches and 10 apples. I waited around a little while, and the man came out from the kitchen carrying 2 huge bags of groceries. I took the 2 bags. I cannot remember how much I paid for them, but it wasn't an exorbitant amount, but it was fairly high. I tottered out to the car. The man had been fixing the car to start. With these 2 huge bags of groceries, Professor Morgan said, "What do you have there?" Well, I said, "Our lunch." we went along for the half day driving toward Copper Center. And at noon, we sat on a log and ate our lunch. I was appalled when we opened it. Not only did we have each bag contained 5 huge sandwiches, plus a free hard-boiled egg and a pickle. Great big pickle. So we had lunch for that day and for the next day, too. We spent one night at Copper Center and the next night at Paxson's, where it was necessary for the cook at the roadhouse to give up his quarters so that Mrs. Morgan and I might have a degree of privacy, there being a few rooms, but mostly just some space at the roadhouse. The road was pretty bad. It was mostly mud holes and chuck holes and stones and all kinds of problems, including the crossing by ferry of the Tananaw. I've forgotten the name of the place, but
that was McCarty, was
McCarty.
It?
McCarty.
Yeah.
The
ferry there. Do you recall what the names of the stops were that you made?
Well, we spent the first night at Copper Center, which was a fairly large place for that time.
Still in operation.
It was large because it was on the road to the copper mine, copper mining area, rather than because of its importance to the Fairbanks trade, I believe. The other night was at Paxson's, which was not a very large place, but relatively new. Copper Center was old at that time. We did not get to Fairbanks until after dark, and it was, as I said, we had slipped and slid through many places, and we had to get out and go ahead and look to see where we could drive and be very careful. More than 2.5 days, not quite the third day. But we did make it to Fairbanks, down to the old Nordale Hotel for me. Professor and Mrs. Morgan owned a nice log house out on the flat halfway between Fairbanks and the college. So they had their own home to go to. That was the typical traveling conditions. It was a beautiful trip, except for the no-see-ums, these little gnats that bother you every time you stop the car. They flocked around us. I taught business administration.
Now, where did you live that year then?
Well, after a few days at the Nordale, they just told me that I might stay at the girls' dormitory on the campus. The girls' dormitory at that time was in the little house, which a little six-room house, sort of remodeled, which later Dean Patty lived in. After living out there for a few weeks, well, there were people at this little girls' dormitory. It was Miss Martha Park, one instructor who was the house mother, and two girls, students, and myself. After a little while, they got another girl student, so I had to move into town. I then went to the Alaska Hotel, where I stayed until the following summer.
Then you commuted, how did you commute back and forth?
On the, what we sometimes call the Toonerville Trolley. It had various names. It was a little remodeled streetcar from someplace in the States, rather elderly. They had put in one of the vestibules of the little streetcar a upright stationary engine. I'm not sure about the fuel for that thing. It probably was gasoline, but I'm not certain about that. But at least it was a sizable locomotive, engine thing. It took up about at least a fourth of the total floor space of the little car. And I do not remember how much the fare was on it, but we paid the fare regularly, a few coins, and it took only a short time to leave the regular railroad station, and it was a narrow gauge arrangement. It ran out to the college. I think it was narrow gauge. When we got off out there, we walked slowly, single file, up the hill. There was a little path that we had worn up the side of the hill, front, facing south of the main road, which went around, drove around behind the main building. We went into the west door, that was the end door of the main building where the classrooms were, and we used that door regularly. Halfway up the hill in the wintertime, everyone automatically stopped to draw a few breaths and also to look at sunrise, which was just coming up then. Beautiful sunrise view from there. Later, the fact that we went into this west door of the building had a certain amount of importance for us. President Bunnell was very eager to have a post office established at College, and named College, because at that time the mail came on the train once a week, came into Fairbanks, and was sorted, and a man from College, somebody, was designated to bring the mail out to the College and make it available late that night or early the next morning. So Bunnell thought that he would do something about that situation. He finally got the post office established, and then he immediately started an effort to hire a boy to carry the mail from the station down a little west at the foot of the hill, but a little west of the main building, where it could be thrown off as the train came into town. That sounded fine, and after he got post office, he found that it was possible to pay a man to carry the mail if it were more than, I think it was a quarter of a mile from the railroad station to the post office. That sounded grand. Only when they measured the distance from the railroad station to the door of the building, this west door, which we were using regularly, the front door was seldom used, south door, he discovered that it was, I think, maybe 10 feet short of the distance for which he could hire a man to carry up the mail. So Bunnell was not one to be stopped at anything like that. He simply ordered them to measure the distance from the railroad station to the front door of the building, the south door, and he found that that fulfilled all the requirements for the distance required for carrying the mail. So we had the mail delivered shortly after the train came in to the College. That was one of the things that Dr. Bunnell succeeded in doing.
Well, what was the enrollment about that time? Do you recall how big your classes were, or what the student body population was? It was less than 100, I'm sure.
Well, by that time, counting the special 3 weeks courses, which gave rather freely, which helped increase the enrollment some, there was over 200 students. I have forgotten the number, but that would include the special 3 week session, minors class and home economics class, among others. The classes, my own classes, ran in size from 5 to 20, or approximately so. My accounting class consisted of 5 and at times 6 people, and the typing classes ran average around 20. I think we had just had 20 typewriters, if I recall right. Another story about the mail, which I might tell, would be that one time a tourist, Bunnell and two or three of the boys were out digging around a little drain by the side of the road, all of them working busily away, and up drove a car from town with several tourists in it. So one of the men stopped the car and asked the men who were working, where is the president's office? President Bunnell said, that building right up there. So the man said, well, thank you very much, my good man, and handed him a quarter. Bunnell pocketed. And after the tourist drove on, up to the building. Bunnell went on traveling. And one of the boys asked him, now why did you tell that man where the president's office was when you knew he wanted to speak to you? And Pennell said, well, he didn't say he wanted to speak to me. He said he wanted to see where the president's office was. So that was what he learned about that. We had many problems in getting underway. Of course, the classes were more or less organized, but they hadn't been running very long. The library was just being set up. And the following summer, Miss Grace Clark, who was an instructor, cataloged the books in the library and got it in somewhat better order. Before that, there had been quite a few books, but no formal library work. Anyone who wanted a book went in, and if he could find it, he could use it. That was it. Bunnell had a lot of plans. He wanted very much to get some agricultural work started in this vicinity. He and I argued violently and on in all directions, since neither of us much of a farmer. He wanted to establish family-sized farms all over this valley at any rate. And he worked very hard to get help through the Hatch Act, which was available to most land-grant colleges, but not to this university because of some technicality which I do not know about. I argued for sort of type of community farming in which there would be community living quarters, probably for young unmarried men who would want to become farmers and who might want to live in the community after they got some farms established, some farming methods established. Bunnell considered that highly well, I guess today we would just say it was communistic and so on. And neither of us quite got our own idea of farming established, but shortly after I left, the Hatch Act was made applicable to the farming community, and some work was established. That was really one of the interesting things was getting some interest in agriculture developed. After living at the college for this little while, as I said, I moved back in Fairbanks on Front Street in a small log cabin in what I believe is now about the 10 or 1100 block of Front Street. We had no street numbers then.
Do you remember some of the town personalities of that time?
yes, knew about there were only about the 1,400 people in Fairbanks then, so in even 2 years one learned many of the people. Abacoff and Brown had a jewelry store downtown. There were two grocery stores, Lavery and Bailey. And BMC, and there was a tiny grocery partway down Front Street. It was always called Front Street in my day at that time.
Did you stay on during the summers, Miss Hamlin, or did you go out?
I stayed in the one summer and down at this little cabin, which I moved to from the Alaska, partly as a matter of economy, because in that day, of course, there were quite a few tourists came in the summertime, and the hotels doubled their charge for rooms in the summertime.
Unheard of.
At any rate, I thought I would like to live in a cabin. So I found this nice little log cabin on Front Street and moved into it. It consists of a nice little living room, quite small as you can imagine, a tiny bedroom, and an equally tiny kitchen, plus one of these big back porches, which we called caches in those days. And one of the things I recall specifically, my little wood-burning stove was so low, it was a tiny little stove, it was so low down that I practically had to stand on my head to fry an egg or something or other at night. So I agitated that my landlord should have a box put under that, with a place underneath in the box to put wood. It was a wood-burning stove, of course. He arranged for that, although I heard that the carpenter had muttered and mumbled greatly about building the box underneath the stove. When I got home that night, though, after the carpenter had been there, the stove was still as low as ever. What the carpenter had done had been take the legs off the stove and take them down to the shop and have them cut off, so that my stove was still practically on the floor. I had I raised a nice garden that summer too. Among other things, carrots. I never had as much trouble with carrots in my life. Every day I'd go out and pull about a bushel of carrots. Mm-hmm. And the next day the rows would just be grown solid like that. I had a little bit overdone the planting, but they grew so fast that I couldn't even keep them pulled out. And same way, but I had nice peas and several other vegetables. Fairly nice garden.
Were the river boats running at that time, 26, 28?
No.
They had already folded up, except for a little local
traffic. Very few boats of any kind.
Uh-huh.
One morning, however, during the winter, that when I was at the Alaska Hotel, I looked out, and to my amazement, there, scooting down the river in front of me, was an airplane. It was only creeping along like this. It was going to go north, and the snow was soft, so they had to bring it down to the river on the ice to take off on skis. They had lots of trouble in those days, but several times planes landed and took off from that little area below the old iron bridge, when it was a big iron bridge, down to the bend in the river. They'd take off that. Mostly they were pulled down from the field by horses. But one time, at any rate, was pulled by a dog's team. I don't know whether that was necessary or whether or not it was just for a sort of a stunt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, does anyone think of any particular questions that they might like to ask Miss Hamlin on the Fairbanks and college of those days, 26, 28?
Oh, it is much prettier than it is now. Much. The cabins were rather picturesque, with always flowers around, and there was plenty of grass. The town extended only out maybe about 10 blocks and then just scattered houses around. The pretty part of the town was this front street from the bridge down to the bend in the river, this area we've been talking about tonight. That had, along the bluff under the river, there were little trees and bushes and such growing up, and then there was a grassy spot, and then a gravel roadway, and a wooden sidewalk. And then most of the houses had fences around them, sometimes down the side. Not all of the houses, but many of them had. And all of them had flowers, practically every house. One house I know had a lot of sweet peas that grew up, had an old-fashioned porch across the front. Who lived in that?
Kramer's, Elsie Irwin's had the, and Kramer's too had.
With lots of big, great big sweet peas growing up on the porch and hanging over like that. And, well, my house was just, amateur kept and so on, but I had planted a big bank of petunias out in front, and they practically drove me out of the front yard because they grew so big and fast. Mrs. Nuppie had a beautiful lawn, every kind of flower you can think of, and they all grew to huge size. She had about the nicest garden with all sorts of flowers in it. But it was really a very attractive looking place at that time. There wasn't the bareness that there is now, especially along the riverfront, which has, changed at any rate, let's put it that way. I won't say deteriorated, but because it has, there may be some improvements on it.
Did this post office stay in the same building all the time?
Oh, no. The old post office was on Front Street, too. Practically everything.
At the college?
And
at the college?
Oh, at the college? Well, it was still there. I think as long as the old main building was there, but I'm not sure about that because, see, I moved away. But it was only just a little place, of course, and it didn't take care of, well, there were only three or four instructors who lived down under the hill and two or three on the campus back of the main buildings and the two dorms. So there were very few people out there besides a few students and the mail that came to the college itself. I don't know how long.
It moved over to the Allison building just about the time that after the Allison building was built. They moved it out of the old main.
What year was it built? Was the Allison building built?
1935. 34.
Was the gymnasium in the old main building in the west wing
of
the old, when you were there?
Oh, was
the gym still up on the top floor of the main building when you were there, didn't they?
Oh, well, yes, just a sort of, it wasn't a real gym. It didn't play, where did they play basketball?
In that gym.
In
on the second floor of the end wing there, the west wing.
West wing, I have almost forgot. I've been at plenty of basketball games there because basketball was big. There was a college team and a high school team and an FE team. Those three, I guess, were the only teams, weren't they? Besides the girls' teams, I think. Oh, big, that was the chief activity of the whole town.
Did Lathrop have his theater in town then? Did he have a movie theater?
And they had pipe organ in it too. Don Adler, Dave Adler's brother, was the organist. And
The talking pictures came in just about the time you left, I would suppose.
Yes, I had. heard some talking pictures, a few outside, not many.
Yeah.
But when I went outside, they were half or more, and they were rapidly converting to boys.
I think they came in about 1928, so...
Yes,
but they had... I wasn't sure if Lathrop had started his circuit in the old silent picture days, but I guess he did all right.
Joe Hunter, my husband, just installed that pipe organ in the Empress.
Oh.
No one knew how to put it in, and the Mexicans came, so Joe Hunter just installed it. Pipe organ.
That was the Empress that's
in
now
the co-op.
Now the co-op drug.
There was a nice little bakery on 2nd Avenue, long in that same area, and there was a butcher shop, and there was the assay office on 3rd Street, wasn't it? Back of the, you know, where Paul Hopkins weighed out the gold and decided how much gold was in the sample that he had. One time he had said, come over and see the place sometime when you get around to it. So one evening I decided I'd trot over. So I trotted in, and here was Mr. Hopkins and a couple of men working back a little ways. And he looked at me and he said, how did you get in here? And I said, I walked in the front door through there. He said, I told these men 1,000 times that they should keep that screen door hooked. Not have people walking in. With probably $100,000 worth of gold sitting around. Well, the street door hadn't been hooked. I walked without even knocking. That was the way it was in those days.
Did you have robbery?
No, there was only one robbery in the 2 years I was here. Some young man stole some furs, and oh, it caused such an uproar and much heartbreak and all that kind of thing. That's the only robbery, as far as I ever heard of, in the 2 years that I was here.
Relatively crime-free, because it was so hard to get away from here. There was no place to go.
What about the old town site of Grail, down the other end of the
Across the river. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't over there very much. I just knew its existence from when we sometimes walked in from the college, when we did, we usually walked down the railroad track. The girls hated to walk down the railroad track because it was a long trestle. It was only about this high, but you know how you have to step from step to step. But we usually walked that way. But other than that, we came in mostly on this little trolley car. Then we walked from the railroad station. I walked from the railroad station over to town and down Front Street to this log cabin. When I was living at the Alaska Hotel, and would be over there frequently, Mr. Foster, the proprietor, would be over there to pick up a prospective customer. He would frequently invite me to ride back in the hotel station wagon, which I never would do. One time I was asked, why wouldn't I ride with Mr. Foster over to the hotel when he was coming back? And I said, because that bus that he uses, the limousine, was just a plain old Black Mariah, which he had picked up in Seattle or somewhere. And I didn't want to ride in it. I was very shy, like.
What other recreation did the students have besides basketball?
They built a ski run, a little bitty ski run, on the campus the second year I was here. And that was about the size of things. Major advance at any rate. There was no football. There wasn't enough people, and then I expect the ground is too hard anyway, so there's no football. Everybody was busy earning a living. We had quite a few Northern Europe students. Well, a few others, but most of the foreign students were from Northern Europe. And they, of course, had to earn their living in mining or something else. So they were pretty busy. Didn't have very much time for recreation. There was dancing, some at the gym out there, and there were dances at the hall in town. I guess it was the Elks. I'm not sure about the Elks on Front
Street. Hall.
Moose Hall on Front Street.
It's an apartment house. 3 seconds, 30. That's on the main end of the line.
Can you think of any other questions you'd like to ask Ms. Hamlin?
Well, did you decide to come to Alaska?
Well, I heard of the position through my own college office at the University of Illinois. I had a friend who was a secretary to the dean, and a member of staff here had written and asked if they had someone who would like to come for business administration, and they referred the letter to me, and I decided, well, I would. I had been teaching in high school in Detroit, and I thought, well, here's a good chance to take a trip.
They started the camp, they call it the big bonfire in the fall. Was that a
tradition? Yes, and I was very much impressed with that. I liked the idea. I had never seen it before. It was simply, first 2 or 3 weeks of school, they built a huge bonfire out for the main hall, and the freshman students each went up and picked up a faggot from the fire, and that was their share in learning and a determination to show that they were learning, and that was their signal light. I think it's a very fine idea.
I don't know. Is it still going? They still have the bonfire?
That's the same connotation now, though, about spreading knowledge. It's not that angle at all.
There used to be a nice ceremony about it, I recall. And the freshmen would put their little individual bonfires set up around the big bonfire, and then, as you say, they'd run up and get a light from the central bonfire and go back and light their own, taking from the central pier of knowledge, you see, their own little individual share. I think that was
That was the idea, yeah. And I thought it was very nice, and particularly for a place like that where they could have a bonfire. I'm not sure that in some city colleges it might look a little far-fetched, but I thought very appropriate to this place.
You know who started it? The Oris Margaret Murray. They're the ones who are not married. Oh. She was the first of Margaret Thomas to graduate. And they loved the outdoors and loved the bonfire particularly, and they started with the winter roast for the first one that year.
That was about the first or second year, wasn't it?
1924.
Yeah, about 1924.
Because the mirrors were gone by the time came. But I was very much impressed with that. We had a start of a good museum there. Whatever became of the big white, of the albino.
Was that there when, far back?
The moose was captured then.
The albino moose. I think they've got it in mothballs someplace.
I hope they still have it.
It may have had been obliged to disappear for a time, because you see, the Smithsonian wanted it. And so did Bunnell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bunnell was not about to give it up,
no.
If he could help it, but he, I wouldn't be at all surprised if that thing may have had to disappear for a few years. I'd love to know, but
I don't think it's on display anymore,
no.
But it was until we moved, the last move, it was still the central attraction.
Well, then they kept
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah, they've been here all the years.
Well, not without a great struggle.
No, probably not.
There were other struggles along that line, but Bennett won some of them.
Did they have sheep that stand up and pose at Wild Mountain?
No, I don't remember sheep.
And did they have caribou there and reindeer?
They had reindeer. When they brought a bunch of reindeer from, or they brought a few reindeer from Nunavak Island, they were going to take them, maybe they didn't come from Nunavak Island, I forgot, from the westward at any rate. And they were going to take them someplace else. They kept them down east along the farmer's road for a while, and Mr. Miller, who was working for Mr. Palmer, Palmer was in charge of the overall work, but
mm-hmm.
Mr. Miller had this particular assignment,
mm-hmm.
And he trained, broke some of those reindeer to harness.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture of Florence Roth and Jim Parker. And another girl out in front of the college building with Mr. Miller holding a reindeer lead.
Mm-hmm.
I was here when the buffalo, batch of buffalo came that were taken out to Big Delta or wherever they were.
Mm-hmm.
They came in on the train.
Now, those were all experiments conducted by the Biological Survey.
Yes.
Larry Palmer was the
right.
biologist, I recall. Well, are there any other interesting highlights? What
yes.
stands out, do you think, in your...
What?
Hold on. I have a question. What were your recollections of Lathrop?
Of Lathrop?
Mm-hmm.
Well, not... I knew him, but only slightly, not enough to have any... He was a power, but I didn't know him well enough to know anything very much about him. He was important in building up the city.
Mm-hmm.
Was that mine at Santana going down? Did he have later had that open Santana? You know,
I'm not
told sure. Came to town.
A little bit, but not enough. It was a joke. However, there was some brought in here for burning, although wood was the common fuel. But the locomotives on the railroad could not burn the coal, so that caused a great deal of comment, criticism outside, and laughter, because here was the Alaska Railroad, the territory asking for money to develop the coal mines, and this, that, and the other, through one way and another. And here was the government railroad, which was carrying the coal, but it wasn't burning the coal in its own locomotives.
No, I didn't know that.
They were
able to use it from down in the Matanuska area, weren't they? Are you talking
about
the...
No, when from the Healy area.
The Healy area,
That Matanuska area wasn't developed as far as coal. I don't think the coal started. They did not start getting coal from the Matanuska area for long years after that, did they? Only just the Healy area, I think.
Oh, well, I'm not sure.
Incidentally,
what did you pay for wood? Did you buy it by the
cartloads?
You
bought it by the card. It was supposed to be measured off, and they brought you some and put it in your backyard. You bought it by the
company. They deliver a lot of wood to people. Did they have a big wood shed in the south part of town?
I don't know. I bought it, but I don't know who. I don't recall now who I bought it from. Who did we buy our wood from, Lydia? M.C.?
No, they didn't sell it. They burned it in their boilers.
Yeah.
In there.
They burned it. Uh-huh. It's a big That's another interesting thing about the cooking here. I had this little tiny cook stove like this. Fairly good little cook stove with you poke the wood in up here, and there was a little oven just like the old fashioned cook stove, except it was tiny. And I built up myself up a big fire and decided I'd bake a little cake or a biscuit or something or other. And I get just as I had done in my childhood in the Appalachian country, where we have good hardwood to burn. I'd build myself up a nice fire, and then I'd start mixing up my batter for whatever I was going to cook, and put it in the pan, stick it in the oven, and the stove by that time is practically cold.
That was my
experience. By the time I got another fire built and going, well, my dough of mixing also had gone flat. Well, I couldn't figure that out for quite a long time, but finally I realized that it was just little old soft wood, you know, that just burned up like that. Well, I'm sure I've taken up much too much time.
Well, we certainly enjoyed these tales of the early days. Now, you didn't, you left out something. You left here in 28, and where did you spend all your time in the kitchen?
The rest of my life. Well, I taught in Atlanta, Georgia for a year, and then I went to Washington, D.C. As a civil service employee in 1935. And I've been there most of the time, working for the Bureau of Public Roads part of the time for the Department of Agriculture, and during the war, of course, out in the Foreign Economic Administration, Food Division, things.
So you were doing office work then with the
with the
government, all the. Well, you're a teacher, you see, that was able to practice what you preach. You retired then, did you, from government service?
I retired from government service. And then, of course, being a sort of a skinflint, I went out and got myself a little odd job to get my time in under Social Security. nothing like keeping at it, you know. And then, well, last year, I decided to leave Washington, D.C. And I decided I would go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I also thought, well, what's wrong with taking in Fairbanks on the way?
So you've been here now for several months, or visiting with
most of the time with Mrs.
With Lydia?
Part of the time.
She's babysitting a house.
Babysitting a house. Well, I see Mrs. Cashin is getting anxious with the cake and coffee, so I guess we'll sign off for now. And again, thank you very much for your entertaining and interesting talk.